Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Higher Consideration. 16. Sedra found Alderwoman Lassa right where Zevo said she would be. She sat in a corner table at the stonework, holding a small meeting with two other people. Paperwork was scattered on the wooden table, and they all spoke in hushed whispers. Sedra ordered a drink at the bar to calm herself down and loosen her tongue. She was chosen by her companions to speak with Lassa, to convince her to change her mind and work with them to break the curse peacefully, after she had explicitly told Zevo she wanted the curse to remain. Easy. Sedra sighed and waited. When Lassa's party broke up, she approached with two mugs of ale. "You look like you need a drink." Lassa looked up at the troubadour. "I remember you. You were with the Witcher's party yesterday, waiting for Radisson." "I see your memory doesn't fail you," Sedra said with a laugh. She put a mug on the table, but did not sit. "I assume you're here on Witcher business, then," Lassa said. "You a sellsword?" Sedra emphatically shook her head. "Only if you consider a loot a sword. I'm a troubadour, and as such, I'm here to make sure this story has a happy ending." Lassa laughed. "So is the Witcher given my offer the consideration it deserves? The only way the story of Lonkoff has a happy ending is if Signet's curse remains." "I wouldn't," Sedra said, quite seriously now, "be so sure of that." "And how do you figure? As I've explained, if the curse is lifted, there's nothing stopping Nilfgaard from taking this town. The Wraiths drive any invaders away." "For now, sure," Sedra said. "And maybe that was true in the past. But Nilfgaard has changed their tactics. They're far less pillage and plunder like the last war. They've adapted. They know now that the best way to keep conquered territory is to win over its people. And what's a better way to win over the hearts of the Lonkoffians than by lifting its 100-year-old curse?" Lassa was quiet, the only sound being her knuckles cracking on the table. "Give that some consideration," Sedra continued. "Once Edirne is conquered, sorry, if Edirne is conquered, then there will be nothing stopping the Black Cloaks from hiring a witcher, or having one of their sorcerers break the curse, and they won't bother asking for your help or opinion." "You don't know that," Lassa said, but her voice lacked conviction. "I do. And you want to know how?" Sedra slid into the booth next to Lassa and looked her in the eyes. "Because curses are made to be broken, just like stories are made to have an ending. Help us finish this long story, Lassa. Please." Lassa broke eye contact and looked down at the table. She sighed and said in a strained voice, "Do you have any idea what it's like, carrying familial guilt your entire life? Do you have any idea how heavy it is?" Sedra thought of her family in Kedwin. She thought of the last time she saw them, over a decade ago, after she had spent the last of the family fortune. Mainly, she thought about her cousin, Catelyn Lestrette, who had vowed to kill Sedra for bankrupting the family, if it was the last thing she ever did. "Yes, I actually do." Sedra put her hand over Lassa's, and she saw tears in the older woman's eyes. She let her cry it out, waited for some time. Finally, Lassa wiped her eyes and said, "Fine, gods damn you. I'll help you lift this familial guilt that's weighed me down. But know that if Lonkoff falls to Nilfgaard because of what we've done, then you'll all have your own lifelong guilt to carry." "It wouldn't be the first," Sedra thought grimly. "Just throw it in the pack with the rest of my regrets." Still, Sedra nodded and patted Lassa's hand. 17. They gathered. 9 in total, outside of Signet's keep on the outskirts of Lonkoff, which meant memory and elder speech. Zevo and Ethramel went into the keep to retrieve Signet. They went through the front gate this time, as the elf deduced that the three knights were simply an illusion meant to keep visitors away. Zevo said he knew that. The other seven, Cedra, Jeremiah, Carmignola, Arthur, Enna, Grammet, and Lassa, waited outside. The sun was beginning to set, and they all felt the unspoken tension that came with it. Ethramel and Zevo returned. Zevo carried a greatsword, and Ethramel was guiding a doddering sorcerer, who was once said to have been powerful and good, down the steps into the swampy marsh. One more followed them, a draugr by the name of Dybend, the soldier of the committee. "You should know," Dybend told Zevo, as he was marking a circle for eight to stand in, "that the wraiths will attack as you try to break the curse. Not because they want to, but because they don't have a choice. It's their nature." "I know," Zevo said. He pulled the cork out of a vial with his teeth and spat it to the ground. A musk, like sun-faded and moth-eaten sheets, emanated from the vial. The Witcher poured the specter oil on his silver blade. He and Ethramel had already discussed what to do. Dybend nodded and disappeared like smoke. The circle was created, and Cedra, Jeremiah, Carmignola, Arthur, Enna, and Grammet each took hold of the length of rope Zevo provided and stepped inside. And each took one item that previously belonged to the committee. Cedra became the poet, Jeremiah became the weaver, Carmignola the tamer, Enna the lover, Arthur the soldier, and Grammet the father. Each gripped their item tightly. Each felt the wind kick up as they formed the circle. Ethramel led Signet to the center of the circle, where Lassa waited. Then the elf hobbled outside the ring. Zevo stood guard on the other side. All that remained was for the sun to set. It didn't take long. The fog came unbidden, as before. Dark, roiling clouds came almost as sudden, bringing with it gusts of wind and a clap of thunder. The outlined circle pulsed blue. Zevo and Ethramel clenched their jaws and fists and stared at the gloom. Arthur was the first to shout. A draugr had materialized in front of him, so close their noses nearly touched. It was Dybend, in his suit of armor and smoking flesh. Dybend neither spoke nor moved. Dybend stood ramrod straight, his yellow eyes boring into Arthur. The troubadour recovered himself and matched the draugr's gaze with his cornflower blue eyes. The next draugr appeared in front of Jeremiah. It took the shape of a teenage girl in rough, homespun clothes. Cedra saw a beanpole of a man with a flower tucked behind his ear. Carmignola saw a fat man with a cap on his bald pate. The draugr's skin was ethereal, their eyes yellow, their posture straight. They all stared at the living, and the living stared back. The circle pulsed. The wind howled. And the first wraith appeared from the mist. Zevo was close, and noticed that this wraith walked with purpose. It walked towards the circle. He spat and cut the spirit off, giving it two quick slashes at the neck. The silver sword cut like a knife through curd, and the wraith shrieked and dissolved into a puddle of ectoplasm. Zevo barely had a chance to look back up before two more wraiths had materialized in front of him. The Witcher snarled and ducked as the first wraith, a long dead Loncoffian, swung a spectral lantern at his head. Zevo pivoted and swung his sword up, slicing the specter from hip to shoulder. It dissolved. The remaining wraith seemed to shudder, then stutter, and then it was gone in a blink. Zevo heard a whooshing sound behind him, and he swung his blade back. The silver clashed with the wraith's pitchfork. Zevo spun on his heel and used his size and strength to wrench the weapon from the wraith. The wraith cried and lashed out with its hands, but the Witcher's sword popped its head like an overripe pumpkin. Zevo swung the ectoplasm from his blade and snarled. Four more wraiths had appeared near him in this time, and they all moved towards the circle with stolid surety. Zevo tossed the silver sword into his diminished left hand and splayed all the fingers of his right hand, making the sign of Yurdin. A circle of lightning, a paler blue than the pulsing summoning circle, surrounded the Witcher and wraiths near him. All four froze in their tracks, stunned by the coursing electricity. Zevo tossed the sword back into his right hand and went to work. The draugr in front of Jeremiah, the weaver, stepped into him. The craftsman felt a chill run through his body, then his head jerked as if a mule kicked his brain. His eyes rolled back and all went white for a moment. And when his vision returned, he is in the same field, yet it is far more crowded with the living. He looks down to see his hands tied with rope, which were connected to five others, similarly bound, in a circle, and they are surrounded by townsfolk, all manner of weaponry and torches in hand. They are shouting. Signet's Keep looms ahead. An older man, with steel-gray stubble, points at the tower and shouts, "Come out, Signet! Come out and tell us what you and your committee have been planning." There's only one window at the top of the solitary tower, and no one stands there. Jeremiah looks back down at his hands and sees the handkerchief clenched in his fist. He looks back up and sees his five companions. Cedra and Carmignola and Grammet and Enna and Arthur are bound and looking down and around as well. No one speaks, though Jeremiah finds he can talk if he wants to. The sun is setting, and the sky looks overcast. Jeremiah hears a howl of wind as the draugrs, one at a time, stepped into their hosts. Ethermel watched this with fascination, but could not let his vision linger. Wraiths had appeared around him, and he could already hear the Witcher fighting behind him. He thought it was best not to disappoint, and, satisfied that no one in the circle was watching, he let loose. Ethermel pointed both arms to the closest wraith and spread out his fingers, drawing on the natural power that emanated from Signet's Keep. The elf had heard of such places, built upon natural ley lines of energy. He muttered an elder speech and shot invisible energy into the ground in front of him. The marshland bubbled and solidified hard as stone, and burst from the earth. 10 spikes shredded the wraith without a sound. Ethermel exhaled and shifted to his left, cursing as his leg throbbed. The wraith charged him, and from his peripheral he saw at least 2 more moving towards the circle.
"It must not be broken," he thought. "We're all dead if it is."
The sorcerer drew more power and shredded the second wraith in a similar fashion. Ectoplasm splattered onto Ethermel's clothes, and he turned and ran, ignoring the pain, to cut off the next wraith. It was dangerously close to the circle. He nearly slipped on the swampy marsh, but managed to maintain his balance and glided towards the specter, his back to the circle. Muttering again in the elder tongue, he drew a deep breath and craned his neck towards the wraith. A gout of flame shot from his mouth and set the wraith ablaze. It shrieked and swung its arms before melting like ice. Ethermel grinned at his handiwork, but the smile faded as he saw a spectral sword swinging towards his cheek. He hopped back and landed on his splinted leg. He yowled and nearly collapsed. He readied another spell and felt another presence materialize behind him. The sorcerer didn't need to look to know what it was. Focusing more on speed than precision, he shot more earthen spikes at the wraith in front of him. It did not decimate it like the others, but the wraith staggered. That was enough for Ethermel, who drew his sword in a flash, went low, and spun. His elven falchion rent the wraith's stomach open, and Ethermel was glad he didn't have guts to spill. He dispatched the wraith with a quick thrust through the heart. He barely had time to turn before the staggered wraith was back on him. He parried the spectral blade with one hand, and used the other to shoot more spikes. This did the job, and the wraith practically exploded. Ethermel was drenched in ectoplasm and sweat.
"How much fucking longer to lift this curse?" he shouted.
But the wind had picked up and drowned out his words. Thunder clapped, and rain started to fall. Inside the circle, Cedra sees the gray-stubbled alderman point to her and say, "Do you confess to practicing witchcraft and dabbling in dark magic? Did you make an unholy pact with Signet?" She is uncertain, and the book in her hands feels as heavy as a brick. She shakes her head and tries to hide the trembling.
"What? No!"
The townsfolk shout, and the fat Edonian lord whispers something in the alderman's ear. The alderman nods and points to Carmignola. "Do you confess to practicing witchcraft and dabbling in dark magic? Did you make an unholy pact with Signet?"
"Not a plowing chance," the doctor shouts.
His voice is nearly drowned out by the townsfolk shouting. The alderman points to Jeremiah. "Do you confess to practicing witchcraft and dabbling in dark magic? Did you make an unholy pact with Signet?"
"I admit to no such thing."
Enna, Grammet, and Arthur gave much the same response. The Loncoffians look ready to tear the committee apart. The window in the tower is empty. One of the townsfolk, a pockmarked man with a pitchfork, rushes towards the committee. Only a thunderclap stops him. The sun has just set. The crowd stills, and everyone looks up to a figure in the tower window. Signet looks every inch the sorcerer, with a long silver beard, a hale face, and twinkling eyes. He does not shout, but his voice carries easily. "Have you finished your show, Alderman? The committee has professed their innocence, every one of them. What shall you do?" All eyes fall to the alderman. The alderman looks to the fat Edernian lord and sees he'll get no help. The choice is his alone. He grits his teeth and shouts, "The evidence is against them. For the crime of practicing witchcraft, we shall carry out their execution." The crowd scrambles with frantic energy. The committee looks up to the tower, and Sedra is barely able to catch the sorcerer's genuinely shocked expression before she feels someone grab her hair and pull her head back. Her neck exposed, a knife touches her throat, and she feels rain stinging Lass's face. The circle around her was roaring with energy, and she knew it was time. Signet slouched in front of her, a glazed and confused expression on his slack face. The alderwoman squared her shoulders. She had to shout over the wind and rain that battered everyone, "Signet, please hear me!" Alderwoman Lassa, for the first and only time in her life, prostrated herself. Her forehead touched the swampy ground. "Forgive us. Forgive us for wronging you, and your committee. What we did was unpardonable. On behalf of my family, please accept my apology." Lassa raised her head to look at the sorcerer. The rain hid her tears. And all at once, it stopped. The rain and wind ceased. The wraiths froze. Signet straightened his back and stepped towards Lassa, graceful as a noble. He stood down and put a hand on Lassa's shoulder. She saw light in the sorcerer's eyes. Understanding. He nodded and said, "I forgive you." The circle exploded, expelling blue energy. The wraiths dissolved and the clouds cleared. The fog dissipated. And there was silence. The first thing everyone heard was a sparrow's song. 18. Cedra walked slowly back to Lonkoff, like everyone else. Only Zevo and Ethermel elected to stay at the tower. No one offered any complaints or protests. No one said much of anything at all. Enna was the first to move. She approached Signet, who had resumed his slouched posture. He looked around languidly, oblivious to everything around him. His eyes had that glazed look again. The she-elf wrapped her shawl around his shoulders and led him back towards town. Cedra thought about what she had seen and heard as the poet. Cedra thought about what she had felt as the poet. She touched a hand gingerly to her throat and shuddered, hoping to never experience that sensation again. She had been pulled back to the present just before the blade slid. They all had, she knew. Cedra had felt another kicking sensation in her brain, another flash of light, and she was back in the circle, just in time to watch Lassa apologize to Signet. The items in each of their hands lost their magical significance once the circle broke. Cedra knew this as well, though she couldn't explain it. She put the poetry book in her bag. So they all trudged back to town silently, thinking about the same thing. Cedra also knew this. The streets of Lonkoff were empty. They walked slowly, as if moving through a bog, feeling the eyes of the townsfolk watching them from every window. Everyone, everything, was quiet. So damned quiet. They went to the Golden Blouse. Cedra entered first. "What are you doing?" a customer yelled as she opened the door. "Close that! The specters will get inside!"
"No," Jeremiah said softly. "They won't. Can I get a drink?"
"Close the door," the man said again. Cedra did not hesitate. She stepped in and found the woman she had been with the night before. The one with hair like hyacinth. The one who wasn't like Lavender. The woman Cedra was torn from years ago. Cedra took this woman gently by the hand and led her towards the door. The woman hesitated and stopped before crossing the threshold. Cedra embraced her and whispered, "You're safe with me." The woman nodded and stepped outside. Everyone watched as they went to the center of the street. Watched as Cedra put her hands on the woman's hips and the woman wrapped her arms around Cedra's neck. Watched as Cedra hummed a slow tune and started to sway. Watched as they danced together, slowly. They watched for several minutes, offering neither comment nor movement. A few stood in their doorways, never daring to cross. Cedra didn't care. She looked her dance partner in the eyes. No, even in the moonlight, she did not look like Lavender. But that was okay. She didn't need to be Lavender. She was enough. The troubadour saw another couple, teenagers, slow dancing with them, like they hadn't a care in the world. A greybeard stepped out from a nearby shop, cane shaking in his hand. He kicked his feet in a jig, threw his head back towards the moon, and howled laughter. He laughed until tears ran down his wrinkled face. Music played softly. This was from Arthur, who had stepped back out. Others followed, slowly at first. Many joined the greybeard in laughter. Many cried. Many kissed their loved ones in the moonlight. Many hugged their friends. Many stood on the sidewalk, frozen from endless possibilities. Cedra's partner rested her head against the troubadour's shoulder as they danced. This feels like a dream. Cedra nodded and thought, it is a dream. Any moment I'll wake up and be back in the circle with a blade at my neck. It's all a dream, from beginning to end, and you never know when you'll wake up. So enjoy it while you can. Cedra felt a dampness spreading on her shoulder. Her partner was crying. Only then did Cedra notice she was crying as well. 19. The street that doubled as a hospital was still deserted, despite the revelry that had overtaken Lonkoff. The wounded soldiers who could move had already joined the party. Those that couldn't watched from the windows. Carmagnola walked past, pretending he didn't notice their gaze. But he did. He noticed everything. He was carrying 4 carafes of vodka, 2 in each hand, courtesy of the abandoned bar at the Golden Blouse. Fedin was the only person on duty. Rest went off to celebrate, the barber surgeon told Carmagnola when he found him scribbling notes at a desk. Not that I blame them. It's not every day a town's saved from a century-old curse. You should join them, Carmagnola said. How long have you been working? 12 hours. But who will? I'll stay on duty. Don't worry. Go and enjoy yourself. Fedin hesitated, looking at the carafes Carmagnola held, but relented. He thanked the doctor and left. Carmagnola made his way to the recovery ward. He found Drern, Lorwetta, and Mark, the Nilfgaardian soldiers, right where he left them. And what in the hell, Drern said, is going on? Oh, nothing. Carmagnola set the 4 carafes down and sat beside them. We just lifted a curse, is all. Lorwetta laughed. Well, ain't that something? So I thought we'd celebrate, he said, handing a carafe to each. I owe you all after I made you drink that hooch last time. I'll say, Drern grinned. Wasn't your best work, doctor. They drank. The alcohol loosened their tongue and lowered their guard. They talked louder than they should have, but no one around them was paying attention. Everyone else was celebrating, too. I'll admit, Carmagnola said with a laugh, I never expected to be celebrating with... The doctor coughed and trailed off. Mark looked at him. With Nilfgaardians, you mean? Well, yes. Lorwetta shrugged. Can't say I expected to be drinking with a northerner. Carmagnola shook his head. And what do you mean by that? That you're all uncivilized, Drern said, not unkindly. Growing up in the heart of the Nilfgaardian Empire, all I heard about was how backwards and superstitious the North was, believing in multiple heathen gods instead of the great sun. How your kings let sorcerers do whatever they wished instead of keeping them on a tight leash, like we did. How all your kingdoms persecuted elves and dwarves and gnomes instead of giving them equal rights with humans, unlike us. How you lacked a senate that represented the interests of your subjects, unlike us. How your society is so stratified by the nobility that no one can rise above their station, unlike us. Excuse me! Carmagnola could hear no more slander. To think that the Nilfgaardian Empire brainwashed their people into thinking northerners were nothing more than hateful barbarians. The North happens to find endless wars and conquests uncivilized. Do the subjects of your empire's conquered provinces worship the Empire and your god as much as you do? You don't know what you're talking about, Mark growled. I'm from Gamera, one of those conquered provinces you bleed about. My people were struggling, plagued by food shortages and infighting, before Nilfgaard liberated us. Now we have peace, and more food than we know what to do with. Now we share the same language as our neighbors. We all share in their art and culture. And so it'll be with the North, Lorwetta said with a nod. You'll share in our abundance. All people will have equality, elves and humans alike. People can rise to fortune on their own merits, not just because of their blood, as it is now in the North. And there will finally be peace on the continent. If a northern king surrenders, the Imperator will even allow them to keep control of their kingdoms as a vassal state. Is that so bad? Carmagnola opened his mouth, but Drone cut in. Perhaps we should put politics aside for now, lest someone with an attentive ear hears us. They drank some more, and Carmagnola thought. He thought of the sorcerer Vedard, whose signet reminded him of. He thought about what he had seen and heard and felt as the tamer. Thought about the knife to his throat. He thought about the choices men make living after them. And he thought of what Radisson had said about higher consideration. Carmignola finally said, "It doesn't sound half bad, how you describe it. You say people can rise on their own merit where you're from. So I must ask how far a good word can be carried in the..." He looked around at the other recovering soldiers, all playing Gwent or watching the street in envy. "The Empire." Mark shrugged. "Depends on how good the word is. And the messenger carrying it," Loetta added. "Let's say, for the sake of argument, that you're the messengers. And let's also say, for the sake of argument, the word is about a doctor who saved your life by helping you escape." The Nilfgaardians eyed Carmignola suspiciously. Drone was the one to succinctly articulate this suspicion. "Why?" "They'll execute you if you stay," Carmignola said. "That's enough. Can you walk?" The Nilfgaardians nodded and, shakily, stood up. It was easy for them to get through the town. No guards were on watch, and there were too many people in the streets anyway. So many, in fact, the townsfolk had overflowed outside of Lonkoff. Small clusters were on the road, drinking and talking and staring up at the stars, which they had never seen so clearly. The four of them passed through. Carmignola had provided them with some of his provisions, enough for a few days. They stood at the crossroads Lonkoff rested on. Drone held out his hand. "Thank you, Carmignola. We won't forget this." Carmignola shook and said, "Don't linger. Get home safe." They didn't linger. Carmignola watched them slip into the darkness. He would later wonder if the consequences that stemmed from his choice were fitting. For now, though, Carmignola returned to his patients, trying hard not to think of anything at all. 20. "He looks so peaceful," Anna said. She brushed a lock of hair from Signet's brow. He snored quietly in the bed she made up for him. "You wouldn't think he'd be able to cast such a powerful curse." Ethermel nodded, but disagreed. Sorcerer's appearances were always deceiving. "He was at one time, but not anymore. There was a moment, I swear, where he returned to his former self, to how I remembered him. Just a moment. Then it was gone." Ethermel said nothing. He had spent much of the evening going through Signet's tower with Zevo, parsing out anything that might be magical or of value. Very little was, it turned out. The only thing Ethermel took was Signet's gnarled staff, which would provide an excellent focus for his magic. Besides, the real wealth was in the power that emanated from the keep. He and Zevo felt it, and they both absorbed as much energy from that place as they could. Ethermel was delighted when he found, after he'd had his fill, that his leg no longer bothered him. The Witcher left the tower first, but not before giving Ethermel a word of advice. "Remember what caused this trouble to begin with, sorcerer." Ethermel didn't let the sentiment bother him. He felt positively manic with energy. He bounded each flight of stairs, two steps at a time. That winded him, so he created small fireballs in his hand as he caught his breath. Then he paced Signet's bedroom, thinking, planning. An abandoned sorcerer's tower might be a useful place to hide, Ethermel thought, and not just for him. For any and all kin who needed refuge from the Dwan. He just needed to make sure the tower stayed abandoned. Plan firmly in place, Ethermel wrote a letter and then bounded down to the keep's outer walls. He spent an hour carving runic sigils into the stone. These runes signified nothing, but looked menacing enough that any mundane Dwan would be hesitant to approach. Fear of the unknown, he knew, was powerful. Plus, it was fun. Afterwards, he took up his new staff and returned to Lonkoff. There was a lively party in the streets, and although Ethermel wanted to join and vent his excess energy, he instead went to find Enna. Ethermel took out the sealed letter he just wrote and handed it to her. "Do me a favor. If you happen to see our elven friends, Adro or Ranith, make sure they get this." "Oh," Enna said. "Seems like you made some fast friends." "Well, I need someone to watch my tower when I'm gone," Ethermel thought. "And I've a feeling they're willing to help any and all kin." "We hit it off, I think," he told her. Enna looked up from the sleeping sorcerer, nodded, and took the letter. "Well, in return, I must ask a favor of you." "Yes?" "I also have a letter that needs delivering. To my sister, Shenny. She lives in a town not far from the Mahakam Mountains. The town's called Kalmek. She lives on the outskirts, in the forest with an elven tribe." The sorcerer nodded. "Does this elven tribe get along with humans?" Enna's rouged lips parted in a knowing smile. Ethermel could still smell the lover's perfume, which Enna sprayed on herself before the ritual. It smelled faintly of coriander. "Not exactly." "In that case, I would be happy to deliver the letter." 21. The next day, Zevo headed for Radisson's keep. The two exchanged pleasantries, and Zevo asked for his pay. Radisson nodded. "You did an excellent job, no disagreements there. But, as I told Sir Keller, our finances are stretched thin at the moment. Wars will do that." "Now you have a chance to turn the tide of the war by taking back Aldersburg," Zevo said. "Because I lifted the curse."
"True.
I recall you saying that those of noble birth deserve higher consideration."
"Also true.
But being a witcher doesn't make you of noble birth." Zevo grunted and reached into his bag. He produced a signet ring and handed it to Radisson. It displayed a white ram on a field of tawny chevrons. Radisson squinted at the coat of arms, then burst out laughing.
"Sir Zevo of Kavir, eh? Who would have thought?"
"Who would have thought?"
They settled on 850 crowns. Lassa was waiting for him as he left the keep.
"You're on your way out, then?"
Zevo hefted a bag of coins and said, "On my way to make a deposit at John Cardy Bank, but I imagine we'll be on our way tomorrow."
"Never to look back or return, I suppose."
"Likely not."
Lassa bit her lower lip.
"I saw what happened 100 years ago. I was sent back there. Everyone else in the circle was, too."
Zevo nodded.
"And I saw the committee. When they were asked to confess, they all refused. They refused without a second thought."
"Zevo, we were always told the committee confessed, but were executed anyways. Does that mean—"
"It means people got part of the story wrong," Zevo said. "It happens. Try not to dwell on it. You've unshouldered yourself of that burden. It's done."
Lassa nodded.
"Thank you."
Zevo started to walk away, but the alderwoman called out for him.
"Just tell me," Lassa said as Zevo turned around. "Did you seriously consider my proposal? To not lift the curse, I mean. It doesn't matter now, but I'm curious."
"I gave it serious consideration," Zevo lied.
22. Jeremiah woke up with a shout. He took a few shallow breaths and touched his throat. He was covered in sweat, despite the cool morning breeze. The specifics of the dream were already fading from his memory, but the feeling lingered. He ate breakfast with everyone at the Golden Blouse. They would leave that morning. No one had to say it. They all knew. They ate in silence, save for when Arthur declared he would be parting ways, as he had a pressing obligation to attend to. No one responded, so they returned to eating in peace. Jeremiah said his goodbye to Grammet, collected the diagram he was promised, and collected his 150 marks from Radisson. Then they departed Lonkoff. Two men were waiting at the gate. Jeremiah recognized them and told the others to go on ahead. Sada, head of the Lawn Coffee and Craftsman Guild, said,
"I see you decided to turn the guild's offer down."
"I did," Jeremiah said, "but I gave it fitting consideration."
Sada spat to show what he thought of Jeremiah's consideration. "You made a mistake. Guilds talk, and I don't suspect any of the Edernian guilds will be happy with what they hear."
"No, I suppose not. Best of luck with your business."
"Best of luck to you. You'll need it." Jeremiah felt a surge of anger well inside of him, but decided to save his energy. His words wouldn't reach Sada anyways. A man like Sada, he realized, wouldn't understand. Some things deserved higher consideration than coin.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from the Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X, or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.